This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Shao Eek. Joining me on Zoom for his monthly show with us is consultant orthopedic surgeon, Dr. Rajesh Singh. How are you, Dr. Rajesh?
I'm very well, Shao Eek. Thank you. It's nice to be back in the studio virtually.
Virtually, that's right. And virtually looks like the way things are going to go for still quite a while yet. And that means many of our listeners are probably also working from home. And that's kind of where we're going with today's topic. It's a bit of a continuation of the recent Facebook Live webinar that we did with you, Dr. Rajesh, where you talked about work from home related aches and pains. So we kind of want to continue the conversation today, try to look at sort of, because I think during the webinar, you shared a lot, and it was a very nice visually driven discussion with Mira about the common postures that could lead to problems. And you shared some ways that people can overcome them at home to sort of like get yourself into better postures. But, you know, there's still more to the story. I think there's also where treatment may come in, what would that entail. So we want to take a look at that today. Do call us with your questions or WhatsApp us because there were a lot that, there were some that we weren't able to address during the webinar. I'll try to bring them up today. And if you have any more, our lines are open 03-7733-2900. You can also WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Of course, there may be some who did not have the opportunity to watch that webinar, Dr. Rajesh. So perhaps just a little bit of a refresher. When it comes to us working at home, long hours of sitting, if we presume that we are addressing mostly the desk-bound kind of work, and we think that there's a way there is a certain type of posture we should adopt. Is there such a thing as right or wrong posture?
So I think, Shari, the question really is your environment and you, you know, so the people sit in certain postures and positions, and the net result is this sort of conversation that somebody has with their environment, you know, the height of the chair that they have available at home, the height of the desk that they have, you know, how, whether they're using a laptop or a desktop, you know, whether they sit standing up, what the sort of, you know, practicalities of the environment are. So I think everybody adopts a posture based on a combination of things. One is, of course, their personal body habit and preference. You know, everybody's not built the same. And that's sort of, you know, patently obvious. So clearly no people are going to do the task in exactly the same way. So in general, I would say that, you know, there's a, if you talk about people who have desk jobs, certainly that's sort of the thing that we focused on during the webinar. But also, interestingly, in clinic, I saw a lady who normally works in a restaurant. So she has a restaurant, and she's now moved that restaurant home. Mm. And so she's working from home doing a catering business. And, you know, she's come in with some sort of unique complaints in relation to the fact that, you know, she's now got to adapt to an industrial kitchen in a domestic situation. So that's been sort of quite interesting for me to observe as well.
Yes, because a home setup may not have the certain the kind of height that an industrial kitchen may have. Things may not be within the reach that she's used to. Issues like that, perhaps.
Yeah, and also just practical things like, say, for example, you know, in an industrial kitchen, she has 4 bench tops. So literally, the food goes from like a production line from bench top to bench top to bench top. Whereas, you know, when she's cooking at home, she's only got the 1 bench top. So what she has to do is she's doing a lot of, you know, bending, stocking, shelving, because she has to, you know, finish one process line with the food, clear the bench top, you know, wipe it down, and then next process line with the food, and then that repeats. Mm. So she came in with sort of a lot of up and mid back pain, not from the fact that, you know, she's standing for long hours, but because, you know, she's having to sort of duck under counters and, you know, carry stuff up onto the counters and off the counters and things like that. So that was sort of, that was an interesting take on the sort of work from home thing. Mm. Because, you know, certainly when I did the Facebook event, it was assumed, you know, sort of from a computer use kind of perspective. while I think that's a majority, there's, you know, also that sort of segment of the population which is doing manual stuff at home.
Absolutely. So, you know, regardless of what kind of work it is, when do we know that the kind of posture we're adopting or the movements that we're using has become a problem for us?
Sakit lo.
As you said, sakit everywhere, right?
Yeah, semua sakit. Okay. So look, to answer that question seriously, there are two things which people complain about. One thing is they complain about the fact that they're just not comfortable. And I had that today, a gentleman sitting in my chair in the clinic. So he's about 67. Yeah, he's 67, his wife's 62. So they came in together as a couple. They're from Setiawan and Perak. And while, you know, she's sitting having a consultation, he literally can't sit still in the chair, right? So he's sort of fidgeting endlessly in the chair, 2 minutes max, and he's moving around. And I said to him, "Uncle, are you in pain?" And he said, "Look, it's not painful. It's just uncomfortable. You know, I just cannot sit in this. I cannot sit in a chair for more than 2 or 3 minutes. Then I have to get up. I have to move. I have to stretch. And then only I can sit down again." And, you know, that was sort of a postural dysfunction that he had. So in that sense, people will complain about pain. That's sort of pretty obvious, the fact that it hurts and it's uncomfortable. They'll complain about the fact that they get fatigued easily. You know, what they used to be able to do, they can't do as much now. So they get fatigued mechanically in terms of doing tasks. They complain a lot of numbness in, you know, a particular distribution. And they also complain of stiffness. I think that's sort of, that's one of the things that I'm sort of starting to see more of. People say it's hard to transition a position. You know, they can get into a position, but it's hard to move from that position to another position. They sort of like get frozen or stiff. So those are usually the complaints that people come up with.
And when if we want to backtrack from those complaints, is it due to us, and you talked about how the way we move or sit for work depends, it's a combination of my environment and my personal body habit. But is it because we're sitting the wrong way for long periods of time that's leading to those complaints? Or are we simply not moving enough? And if we move enough, interspersed throughout the workday, would that help?
Okay, so I think they're very good questions. And really, you know my tagline, motion is the lotion. So I think that movement is the solution for pretty much everything. The challenge is you can fidget a certain amount when you're working on a computer, but you know you can't fidget enough to necessarily get your full range that you need. So if you look at the four characters that we had that we discussed, let's start with Rebecca. So Rebecca is basically an office worker. She's sitting down on a sofa. Her elbows are propped up on the sort of arms of the sofa. And you know she's leaning forward to scran at the laptop that's in front of her, right? So that's called the forward neck posture. And if you look at her from the side, she looks like a C. Instead of sitting up straight, literally she's like a C. I call it the prawn. She's sort of curled up like a prawn, as it were. And in this sort of forward neck, this forward neck posture is probably the most common postural mistake that people make when they're working with computers. And it's a little bit hard for them to be sort of aware of it. When you sort of see kids do it, you say, "Well, you want to go inside the screen, is it?" You know, they're sort of being sucked into that. Especially when you're playing games.
You're subconsciously getting closer and closer to the screen.
Yes, yes, you are subconsciously getting closer and closer to the screen. And it's hilarious because when you watch kids play games, right, the more exciting and riveting the game gets, the closer they get to the screen.
And the shoulders hunch up.
Yep. And adults are no different. You know, the more interesting that problem gets, or the more difficult that problem gets on your screen, that's sort of your normal posture to attack the problem, as it were. So you have to look at this from an evolutionary perspective. When your focus as a hunter-gatherer was on, you know, this small furry thing that was going to be your meal in front of you and you needed to catch it, to kill it and eat it, clearly all your postures would put you in a position to be able to pounce forward on it. And that's basically the same thing that's happening now with the computer. So with the forward neck posture, the most common thing that we find in practice is sort of people functionally, I mean, not structurally, functionally is that people get irritation of the nerves that travel through the planes of muscles. Okay, so I'll give you a few analogies here. Let's say that you have pillows, and you go back to the era of Patrick Teo. I love that. I'm going to get into the station and get his autograph. I can't believe you've got Patrick Teo spinning tunes for you. I used to listen to him. I used to listen
to
him.
Do you not want my autograph, Dr. Rajesh?
Let's put it this way, right? There's the contemporary and then there's the legendary. You're not old enough to get to legendary yet.
Okay, let's move on. Okay, what's the link between Patrick Teo and...
Okay, so the link to Patrick Teo is that when I was a boy and I had to fluff the cotton from the pillows. Okay, so in the old days, we had cotton in pillows. And being the youngest in the family, I got the job that the bigger boys didn't want, and which is I had to sit there with, grandma and aunties, and basically we had to comb through the cotton. So we had to go comb through the cotton. And my reprieve used to be, or my allowance used to be, that I could listen to the radio. And it was Patrick Teo spinning tunes on the radio back then. So when you fluff cotton, or when you sort of comb through cotton in those cotton pillows, what you'll get is you'll get these hard knots of cotton, all right? So the way you do it, you sort of fluff the cotton up between your fingers, and then you get these big bales of, or this sort of big metal containers of cotton that you go put out in the sun. But there'll always be a small bowl of basically hard cotton that was basically not usable and had to be thrown away. So that sort of thing happens in a tissue in the body called fascia. So fascia is like the cotton padding in the body. It's a loose connective tissue that literally, when you look at it, it looks like fluffy cotton. And just like in a pillow, if you don't fluff your pillows regularly or you don't sun your pillows regularly, you get this condition called densification of the fascia. So that's where the cotton ends just sort of stick together. And they become an unseparable kind of mass, as it were. And it's worse if, for example, if you spill juice on the cotton pillow, that's even worse because the fibers then really stick together. So the same thing happens in human fascia tissue. If you have fascia that's sort of inappropriately used, incorrectly used, not stretched commonly, then you get this issue of densification of the fascia, and then you get this sort of really hard, lumpy connective tissue. And then stuff gets stuck in it. The very common thing that gets stuck in fascia is nerve. Then when you get entrapment of nerve, you get this sort of feedback cycle where a nerve is irritated. Because a nerve is irritated, it fires signals. Because it fires signals, the muscles go into spasm. Because the muscles go into spasm, the position is held wrongly. Because the position is held wrongly, you get more densification of fascia.
So it's a cycle.
It's a cycle, and the cycle starts with a prolonged wrong posture. Mm-hmm. Or even a prolonged wrong activity. So I think that that's probably where a lot of this thing with the pandemic is going to come out in the wash after the pandemic is over. People will find that it's difficult for them to be able to do things that they used to be able to do because they're finding that, you know, it's getting them, it's causing pain. So they've sort of moved from one postural style into a different postural style. And each of those postural styles, done incorrectly, has caused some densification of the fascia.
All right. So what I want to find out when we come back from the break is what next? And if it's just a matter of correcting the posture, will that fix things? Or have we reached a point where you can't sort of reverse what's happening? So I'm speaking today to consultant orthopedic surgeon, Dr. Rajesh Singh. We are discussing work from home aches and pains. It's sort of a continuation of the discussion that we had in our health and living webinar very recently with Dr. Rajesh. It's clearly an issue that many of us are grappling with. So do call us with your questions, 03-7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll be right back, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Yik, and my guest, consultant orthopedic surgeon, Dr. Rajesh Singh. We're discussing how to overcome work from home aches and pains. If you have any questions, call us 03-7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. So, Dr. Rajesh, you described a process before the break that stems from prolonged wrong posture when we are working, and largely because we're working at home, where desks and tables and you know what we have at home may not be it's not suited for the kind of work that we're doing for long hours on end. It's jump in if you want to correct me, and it's leading to nerve irritation. There was a process you explained related to the densification of the fascia, but ultimately you're talking about nerve irritation, which is resulting in pain. Did I summarize that?
Absolutely correct. Any of my medical students couldn't have done any better. The reason why I'm smiling from ear to ear is because
I'll give
I can
you that
see
autograph
the-
now.
The reason why I'm smiling from ear to ear is because in the window behind you, where I can look through in the office, there's somebody who actually got up from the chair, were waving their arms around, stretching and moving for probably in the time you were speaking, maybe 15, 20 seconds, mm-hmm. and then sat down again. And I think that's one of the things that we don't do in our home environment, right? So I have, I've seen people work from home. So I have one of my relatives living with me for a little while, and she has a work from home job, and she's literally frozen in front of a computer for like 4 hours. And I'm going, you know, that's not normal. You can't sort of be frozen in front of a computer for 4 hours. And one of the things she said to me was, yeah, but you know, there are no cues at home, because, you know, at work, you know, you're sort of in an office, there's a work environment. You've sort of got all these subtle cues of, you know, what should be done, shouldn't be done, what happens, what the rhythm of the day is. But when you're at home, those things aren't there. So, you know, it's that sort of, it's that isolation in work as well, which I think has an impact on whether you actually do get up to do that 20-second movement and stretch that I just saw somebody do in the office behind you.
Hmm. And perhaps Johnny on the line, perhaps Johnny's question may actually be related to this as well. Good afternoon, Johnny. You have a question.
Hello. Yes, good afternoon. Am I online?
Yes, you are. Your question, sir?
Yes, thank you. Okay, I'm 60 years old. Before the MCO and before my vaccination, the Sinovac, I'm quite active, you know. I had my table tennis, my Tai Chi, hiking on the hill almost daily. I don't feel my body so much ache, you know. It's just a minor ache. But now, because of the MCO, I'm locked down. I hardly do any exercise. I feel that my body sometimes has a spasm, you know, my cramp, my leg cramp, even my chest sometimes has a pull, you know, like a spasm. The Malay call angin. Is it, do I need to see a doctor? Is it, or is it because of the long MCO, a lack of exercise? I will hear on the radio. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, Johnny, that is such an excellent question. Thank you for that. Look, the short answer is it's basically MCO related. And the long answer, to sort of give you some philosophical understanding, is let's say you're on a bicycle. The bicycle's moving. You need very little effort and energy to keep the bicycle moving, right? Because it's sort of, it's a system, and the system has momentum, and the momentum keeps going. The problem is when you stop your bicycle, when you come off your bicycle, and then you try to start riding your bicycle again, particularly if it's uphill, it's very, very difficult to do. And the reason is because you've lost momentum in the system. So that basically is what's happening to a lot of people. And, you know, I'm really seeing it in probably the 40s plus. Up to the 40s, people, a little bit easier for them to get onto their bike again, philosophically speaking. But in the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, people are really, really struggling, because the skeletal system needs movement. The skeletal system gets its nutrition through diffusion. So when you move, tendons get to eat and drink, muscles get blood flow, joints get lubrication, old degraded proteins are broken down and replaced with fresh, new, malleable proteins. So the very unfortunate thing in the situation, Johnny, is the fact that you've got people who are just sort of cooped up in very small premises, you know, hotel rooms even being a major culprit. So I've seen so many people who have come back from having been overseas. You know, they've gone to visit, you know, their grandson or granddaughter, their child's overseas. You know, somebody's delivered, you know, they go MCO, no MCO, lockdown, no lockdown, I'm going. So they go overseas, they get cooped up in a hotel for, you know, 7 to 14 days. they do whatever they have to do. They come back, they're cooped up in a hotel for another 7 to 14 days. And then I see them. And these people have really, I call it deconditioned. Momentum to be able to do the things that they normally do because they've been so restricted. So the second part of your question, Johnny, was whether you needed to see a doctor or not. I think you need to see a healthcare professional. I think the physiotherapist would probably be a very reasonable port of call for you to say to a physiotherapist, look, you know, these are the problems that I'm having. Stretching, going back into activity kind of situation. And if the person's a sophisticated therapist, they should be able to work out what you were able to do before, what they can reasonably do for you without getting you back or without giving you injury to get you back into your day-to-day activity.
All right. Dr. Rajesh, if I could get you to turn off your video because there were some points where you were lagging, perhaps that will help. But I'm glad you brought up seeing a physiotherapist. Now, at what point, because during the webinar, you provided and your physiotherapy team, provided some simple activities and stretches that people can do at home while they're working. But at some point, if the pain doesn't go away, one would need to seek further attention. Would the physiotherapist be necessarily the first port of call?
Okay, so for my team, yes, because the guys and girls know what their limits are. And, you know, that's one of the great pleasures I have with working with this team of people because they're very, very dedicated, committed, and professional. You know, they will come to me, so the physiotherapist will have a patient that they're looking after, and if they're not sure, they'll come up with the patient to me. And they will say, Dr. Rajesh, this is what I think is going on, but we're not making the progress that we expect. So what do you think we should, or, you know, can I get an opinion? So they won't ask me, what do you think we should do next? They will say, give me more information. And that's what I really respect about my team, the fact that they are open-minded and we're happy to work together. So there's some things where I'll say to them, look, guys, I've got no idea what's going on. I'm scratching the bottom of the barrel. Can you have a look? And then with a fresh pair of eyes, they'll say, look, you know, you hadn't considered this or you hadn't considered that. So movement sciences are pretty complicated. You know, you've got a very complex biomechanical system. And while we see common patterns of injury or dysfunction within the biomechanical system, it really is too much for just one person to be able to handle all alone. So you need to see somebody who's interested and passionate at what they do. And, you know, I believe in the team-based approach, and that's sort of the nature of my practice, which is we work in a team and different members of the team are all pulling in the same direction for your skeletal benefit.
So from a consumer or patient perspective, when I'm having these problems, what can I achieve from going for physiotherapy? What can the physiotherapist do for me? I mean, taking, for instance, the situation you described earlier about the densification of the fascia leading to nerve irritation, therefore leading to pain.
Okay, so we look at it in two halves, all right? So we look at it in terms of, is this a functional problem or is this a structural problem? So as Marcus always likes to ask, are you moving poorly because you're in pain or are you in pain because you're moving poorly? So I think that's the first thing that you can expect. You can expect the physiotherapist to answer that question for you. You know, they can look at movement patterns and then say to you, well, clearly you're in pain because you're moving poorly. So let's work on your movement patterns. The second thing that they can do is if it's a functional problem rather than a structural problem, they can help you to recognize what that functional problem is. So which groups of muscles aren't moving before the next group of muscles? Because there's always compensations. You know, one of the fantastic things about the skeletal system is that it's infinitely adaptable. And the infinite adaptability of the skeletal system means that you get into patterns of movement which may work for the short term, but which have a long-term detriment. And so you can correct those movements, but you know it takes brain power to correct those movements. So I always say to patients when they're going for physiotherapy, I'll say to them, it's not like going to the gym to break a sweat. It's like going for tuition. You know, you're given an assessment. When you've been given the assessment, then you're given tasks to correct, and then you're assessed. So literally, it's a re-education of the connection between the brain and the limb. And, you know, that's without even going into sort of the, that's just the mechanics of it. That's not even going into the psychology of it. One of my favorite authors, Oliver Sacks, he's a neurologist who wrote The Man Who Mistook His Wife for a Hat. So he wrote a wonderful book that I've just finished reading called A Leg to Stand On. And that was his experience about breaking his leg up on a mountain and a dissociation that he had between his mind and his leg. So his body ego basically rejected his leg. His body ego said, I don't have a leg, right? So there's a lot more complex relationship from the mind to the limbs than just simple hardware and mechanical wiring, right? But what do I know? I'm just an orthopedic surgeon. So we'll stick with the nuts and bolts, all right? So to answer your question, what you can expect from your healthcare provider is you can expect an identification of whether you're moving poorly because you're in pain or whether you're in pain because you're moving poorly. If you're moving poorly because you're in pain, you can expect some idea of what process is going on. Now, inevitably, the process that's going on that's causing skeletal pain is inflammation. So the inflammation comes usually before the densification. The way I like to explain inflammation is a fire. So if you take a piece of tissue paper and you set it on fire, that's different to a piece of wood that's burning. That's different to a piece of coal, right? Mm-hmm. And that's the key to understanding skeletal inflammation. So inflammation occurs very commonly in the body. You know, sand goes in your eye becomes red, that's inflamed, right? You have appendicitis, your appendix is inflamed. So inflammation is sort of a common physiological process. It's just that the flavor of inflammation within the skeletal system is either acute, chronic, subacute, or just long-term low-grade. And I have patients who have high uric acid who say, I've never had an attack of gout, but still have extensive joint damage from the fact that they've had high uric acid. And they go, well, doc, how did that happen? My joint never hurt. So the answer is very simple. If you take a saucepan of milk and you put it on the stove, and you put the fire on the lowest setting. If you put the fire on the lowest setting, the milk will still burn, mm-hmm. even though it's been, you know, even though it doesn't boil. And I think that's basically how inflammation within the skeletal system is. Long-term untreated inflammation causes damage. And that damage is what we call structural damage, which is irreversible.
All right. And very quickly, Dr. Rajesh, when it comes to going for physio, it's not just a physio doing something for you. It's very much you becoming involved in the process, you relearning, the re-education that you talked about. But I think I've also heard a lot of people saying, I don't feel any better after going for a month or whatever. I don't want to. Is that a big challenge in terms of sustaining physiotherapy?
No, I think that if you're doing it and you're not feeling better, the diagnosis is wrong, to be blunt.
Is there a window?
I think the window depends on what you want to achieve. So say, for example, pain relief should be relatively quick. So if you say that you're in pain, a skilled therapist should be able to work out what's causing your pain and relieve the pain pretty quickly, like, you know, one session, two sessions, three sessions kind of thing. Mm-hmm. If you want to correct movement, that's really very, very sophisticated. To be able to re-educate somebody is really very difficult because it's not like an exam to say to somebody, you need to study, you need to pass this, you know, written exam. Whether you understand the material or whether you wrote the material, regurgitated and forget it the next day, it doesn't matter. This is really about teaching somebody a skill. And in teaching somebody a skill, you really have to break it down in terms of the smallest fundamental steps. Then you have to get them to practice those fundamental steps until it becomes innate for them. And part of the time, your environment's really your enemy, because if you have a particular work setup that you refuse to change, no amount of physiotherapy is going to combat that. So the most common complaint that people give me when I say to them, if you use a laptop, stick it up on a stack of books so that your laptop camera is at eye level with you and you're not looking down, the comment I get is, yeah, but then how to access the keyboard? And my answer is 15 ringgit. You go to Digital Mall, you buy a USB keyboard for 15 ringgit. And they go, oh, yeah, can, huh? Well, yeah, of course, you know, you can use an external keyboard. So a lot of things are just really practical changes which sometimes people don't think about because they don't think they're that important. But really, if you put yourself in a box for 8-10 hours a day, and you know, only come out for another 8 hours a day, and then you sleep the rest of the time, that 8 hours of a day of being sort of cooped up in a box is not good for your skeletal system.
Even if at the end of the 8 hours we stretch, we run around, we get in that exercise,
Then you're not going forward. You're only standing still. And remember, we're always fighting age. So what happens with all proteins in the body is, as proteins age, they're broken down, and then they're replaced with new proteins. So when you look at the skeletal system in particular, this sort of protein turnover is very, very, so when, because the skeletal system is made so that the proteins are subject to lots of stress, either tension, compression, friction, or gliding movements, and those proteins sort of have a shelf life. So every month, every week, every year, you get new sets of proteins. So when you are able to reduce the wear and tear and keep up with your repair, then you're net positive. If you increase your wear and tear and your repair can't keep up, then you're net negative. And that's how things accumulate. And that's why conditions like smoking, so that's one of the things that we didn't cover on the webinar that I really wanted to cover. Smoking is a huge problem. And the reason why smoking is a huge problem with the skeletal system is because it affects the repair part of the wear-tear-repair equation. Diabetes is another one. Diabetes basically does two things. It increases the wear and tear because it glycosylates the protein. So you've got sort of proteins which normally will have a shelf life and will degrade and then will be replaced by fresh proteins. What diabetes does is it accelerates the process of those proteins becoming hard and stiff. So tendon disorders or tendinopathies in diabetics, even if they're well controlled, is actually much, much more common than is recognized. And lots of diabetic patients are wrongly diagnosed as having nerve poisoning by the diabetes. And what they've got is actually a mechanical entrapment of a nerve through stuck tendons and through stuck muscles and through stuck fascia. So when you talk about this idea of being able to catch up, yeah, I mean, you can catch up, but the question is, where are you? Are you in a net positive? Or are you in a net negative?
I like the fact that you brought up the smoking because, you know, you talked about cues when you are actually at the workplace, cues to get up and move around. And I'm sure there are a lot of people using smoking as an excuse. You know, I'm just walking down to get a smoke, but that's not right kind of cues.
No, it's not called smoke. Apparently, it's called oxygen. So somebody in the office told me, "Dog, I'm going down to get some oxygen."
Exactly.
Wait, and what's this thing?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
We'll come back from the break. Just to very quickly talk about chiropractic treatment, because we had a few of those questions at the webinar, and I think it's something on everyone's minds as well. You know, what is the role of chiropractic treatment when we're talking about these kinds of aches and pains? I'm speaking to consultant orthopedic surgeon Dr. Rajesh Singh, discussing work from home aches and pains. Very quickly, you can still call us 03-7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899. We'll be right back. BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Shawi, and my guest, consultant orthopedic surgeon, Dr. Rajesh Singh. For his monthly show, we're discussing overcoming work from home aches and pains. It's kind of a continuation of the discussion that we started with Dr. Rajesh for our Health and Living Facebook Live webinar just at the end of June. And we've covered a lot today, the sort of philosophical understanding, the actual practical issues that are going on, what needs to be done. Apart from physiotherapy, Dr. Rajesh, are there other treatments, management methods that may be needed?
Okay, so let's probably cover the common non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs as well as corticosteroid injections. So those are two very common things that people will be exposed to when they have a skeletal complaint. The first thing that you have to understand is the reason why we use NSAIDs and steroids is because the fundamental root cause is inflammation, as I already said. And both of these things suppress inflammation. They suppress inflammation in different ways, and they do it by via different mechanisms. they've got sort of their advantages and disadvantages like every other medication. The caution with corticosteroids is the fact that they do cause reduction in tissue turnover. And this is something that people do have to be aware of. When steroids, one of the basic mechanisms by which steroids work is that the medication binds onto the cell membrane, goes into the nucleus of cells and down-regulates certain protein functions. Now, those protein functions are also necessary for tendon repair. So one of the reasons why corticosteroids have sort of a bad reputation is because they've been abused. So the simple analogy that I like to give my patients is, let's talk about salt in food. So people say that salt is bad. If you have a lot of salt in your food, you get, you know, high blood pressure, kidney trouble, all that sort of thing, right? Now, but that doesn't mean that when you cook food at home, you don't put salt in your food, right? Because if you don't put salt in your food at home, the food has no flavor. Mm-hmm. So corticosteroids are exactly the same. A small amount of corticosteroid delivered precisely at the right location for the right problem is exceptionally effective. The problem is that lots of traditional medications, traditional Chinese medications, traditional Malay medications, traditional indigenous medications, all traditional medications which are highly effective contain steroids of various descriptions. And so when you have a skeletal complaint, or the basis of which is inflammation, which is where you're at the process part before the structure part of the problem, and you take these medications, you feel wonderful because your pain disappears immediately. Then what people do is they say, well, I don't have to change my posture. I don't have to change how I work. I just have to keep taking these medications. But long-term steroid use is harmful. And, you know, it's so difficult in the Malaysian community to convince people to stop taking these herbal preparations. And, you know, periodically somebody will end up in hospital with adrenal suppression. That means that their own body stops producing the corticosteroids, because your body produces corticosteroids by itself. And if you keep taking corticosteroids from an external source, the body will shut down your own production of corticosteroids, right? So people who end up having corticosteroid-related skeletal complications are very, very hard to cure. And they're very, very hard to cure because they're on this net balance of wear, tear, repair. Their repair has basically gone to zero because of their corticosteroid abuse. And their wear and tear continues because of, you know, age, occupation, whatever. And so while I say that people shouldn't be afraid of corticosteroids given by healthcare professionals for a specific purpose, they should also understand why the sort of fear factor behind corticosteroids is there. It's because they have a history of being abused. It's not because they're bad medications. Mm-hmm. Okay. And non-steroidal anti-inflammatories is very simple. You know, you have inflammation, I give you something to suppress the inflammation, pain go away. The only caveat I'll put, it's a very free, very effective non-steroidal anti-inflammatory that sits in your freezer. It's called ice. Ice is as good in terms of its efficacy in suppressing inflammation as a potent oral anti-inflammatory medication. It's just that nobody makes much money from selling ice as an anti-inflammatory, mm-hmm. so it doesn't get promoted that much. But I would like to encourage people, if they have an ache, if they have a pain, before you reach for that anti-inflammatory, just grab an ice pack out of the freezer and slap it on and see what happens. If your pain reduces or goes away, then you know that the basis of your pain is inflammation. And then, you know, that's some useful information you can say to your healthcare professional that, look, you know, my knees hurt for 3 days, you know, I put an ice on it for an hour and it felt really better. And then, you know, by the end of the day, the pain came back. All right, so that gives your healthcare professional immediate access to information that you probably have an inflammatory basis for your condition, as well as practical information of how to treat you. Well, you know, if ice pack for half an hour a day stopped your pain all day, then do ice pack twice a day, no?
The cheapest hack ever. What about chiropractic?
It is.
Sorry.
Okay, so that's okay. Carry on.
I just want to bring up chiropractic treatment because sure. That those questions came up quite a fair bit in our webinar. And a lot of people just want to know, can I go for that to resolve my aches and pains?
Okay. So firstly, let me just dispel this turf war between orthopedic surgeons and chiropractors. I work very well with chiropractors. Hayden, Andre, Thomas, these are all people who I'd give a big shout out to. These are all people whom I've worked with over the years. All these people have in common the fact that they're very, very good diagnosticians and they have a very solid understanding of the musculoskeletal system. So that's why I work with them. So the challenge with chiropractic treatment in Malaysia is that there is no legislative framework for a chiropractor. So somebody can be sweeping the road one day and decide that opening a chiropractic practice is quite a good idea, open a sign that says chiropractor and start treating people. As opposed to somebody who goes through a four-year structured training program at IMU, which is a good training program in Malaysia, and then they come out and they say, well, I'm a chiropractor. So the problem is, if you want to call yourself a nurse in Malaysia, you have to be registered with the nursing board, and the nursing board has ethical professional standards in terms of whether you can call your nurse or not. But there's no national standard for or legal standard for being called a chiropractor. And I think that's part of what the problem with chiropractic services in the country is, the fact that there is no control and there is no standardization. In terms of assuming that you have a skeletal problem and you want to see a suitably qualified chiropractor to help you achieve your skeletal aims, sure, absolutely nothing wrong with that.
All right. Jasmine is asking on WhatsApp, do you have examples of traditional medicines that contain steroids? And I guess we wouldn't want to be pointing to any particular brands, but perhaps red flags that people can look out for.
Okay, so the red flags is the roadside seller. All right, so this is sort of the huge red flag where somebody's doing a show of strength on the pavement and there's a group of people gathered around this individual and that the medication promises to cure all and everything. So, you know, okay, let me try and make it as simple as I can. If you have a traditional medicine that you take and the next day you feel fantastic, there's something wrong with that medicine.
Okay. Regardless of whether it's a roadside seller or a lot of them are sold online now, right? Through WhatsApp chat groups, social media.
That's the worst possible roadside ever because there's zero accountability. Yeah. So basically, if you take something and you go the next day, wow, I feel like $1 million, something's wrong. Medicines don't work like that, right? If they do work like that, they contain pharmacoactive compounds. If you don't know what's in that medication, then you're taking pharmaceutical compounds of unknown doses with unknown potencies for unknown purposes for unknown periods of time other than the fact that you feel great.
All right. Last question, also something that was brought up a lot during the webinar, the right equipment, ergonomic equipment, chairs, tables, things like that. Do we need to invest in such equipment?
Okay, I think the correct answer is you need to have the correct posture. And as we showed during the webinar, it's very simple for you to be able to correct postures without expensive equipment. You know, you need a yoga ball, you need some, you know, cushions from the sofa, you need some towels, you need some pillows. That's all you need. So I think the answer, if the question is, is it worth correcting your posture? I think the answer is very clearly yes. Is it worth correcting your posture with only expensive osteopedic equipment? Well, only if I sell it, but since I don't, you're welcome to use, you know, pillows, cushions, bolsters, whatever that works, whatever's sustainable for you. So if you have, you know, if your office wants to give you a nice chair that fits your spine, well, that's excellent. But if your spine's a little bit curvy and you're told, you know, this chair costs 5,000 ringgit, it should make your back feel better, there's something wrong with you. Well, there's nothing wrong with you. There's something wrong with your chair.
All right. A final message, Dr. Rajesh?
Motion is the lotion.
Absolutely. So make sure you get out and move around, not for that smoke or oxygen, yes, whatever you want to call it. I've been speaking to consultant orthopedic surgeon Dr. Rajesh Singh about overcoming work from home aches and pains. And we've been referring to our health and living webinar a lot. So if you missed that, you can actually go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/BFM Radio, to watch the full webinar where all these these examples and little videos that Dr. Rajesh has been referring to. You can see them there. And you can also download our guide to working from home after you've watched the webinar. The link is right there. Thank you so much, Dr. Rajesh. You've been listening to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.